warning, what you're about to hear may cause uncontrollable sadness of the heart, running of makeup, and spontaneous ugly crying. Attempting to keep a put-together appearance may be complicated. If confronted by someone in public about these symptoms, the Root Note simply recommends you share this episode with them. For those about to listen, Godspeed. We'll all get through this together.
The following has been produced by PutThemInASong.com.
My name is Shane Yoder. I write songs for a living. And every day, I hear stories transform into songs. Now you can too. Welcome back to The Root Note. The roots of songs are not always comfortable. You know, they don't come from a comfortable place. If that's the case, the song should give a powerful message. Even though some songs hit us where it hurts, they're meant to be relatable. This is the story behind the song that was written to say, "I'm so sorry for screwing up." Every time I played this song at a show, people have come up to me and said how much this song has touched them. The story behind it is hard for this couple to tell. This is why I changed their names, and I'm going to tell it my way. This is Season 2, Episode 8, 5 Seconds. It was 1 week before school started back up again. Summer is almost over, and some may argue so is my childhood. If the previous 8 years of playing AYSO soccer has taught me anything, it's that people should have and stay in their own positions. I got moved around a lot because I could adapt pretty well to each position, but I never got great at one. I learned enough ball skills to break a few ankles, but my shooting accuracy was low. I think I only scored one or two goals in my entire soccer career. Right now it's about 8:30 a.m., and I just put on my cleats. I grabbed my backpack with a water bottle and a packed lunch. I had a long day ahead of me. The last thing on my mind is shin splints. I didn't even know what they were. But I was about to. I didn't want to be late for my first conditioning practice. It was the Northern Huskies high school soccer team. This was a big leagues. Well, you know, I'll finally have my own position to play. It's about time to play some real soccer games. This was 1 week of tryouts before school started up again. Well, maybe tryouts isn't the right word, because everyone made our high school teams. We didn't really have a whole lot to choose from. Maybe people got cut from football, I'm not really sure. I just know the football team had a full bench of subs on the sideline, and I'd come to find out that the soccer team had 3 subs and a water cooler on a good day. So I grabbed my backpack and head out the door for this summertime practice. I lived about 2 miles from the high school. Uphill both ways, also downhill both ways. Steep hills. It was before I had my license or had a car, and my parents were both at work. So I had to walk. Wearing my cleats to walk to a practice where I'd run all day was probably not a good idea. After 1.5 miles of power walking, you know, because I hate to be late, my shins were on fire. Like 2 cramps I couldn't knead out. Shin splints suck. I took the last shortcut I had through the cornfield. This cornfield just happened to butt up against the soccer field. I emerged from the other side of the corn, hobbling and sweaty. No warning. I was just missing a revving chainsaw over my head. "Hello, team. Want to play a game?" Those first 5 seconds, as the soccer team was trying to comprehend what in the world was going on, it left an impression, I'm sure. However, it was just another walk through a backyard cornfield for me. But this time, there were people in the field instead of deer. I'm not sure I can say that I single-handedly saved my fellow freshmen from initiation. But I can say that this was one of those years that the seniors didn't do it. I felt lucky. But maybe the seniors felt lucky they didn't see my place in the corn. Either way, this is the year Mike and I became acquainted. Teammates, but not necessarily friends. He was a senior when I was a freshman. I remember he had the longest throw-in in the tri-state area. That was admirable to me because my throw-in sucked, and it never got better. Like I said, we were teammates, but not necessarily friends, so we'll fast forward to me getting my first job. My first job was in a restaurant washing dishes. I went to a job fair with some friends. They happened to be my band members. There were tables set up in rows on the community college basketball court. The first table we sat down at happened to be our last one. All three of us were hired on the spot. My two friends were hired as servers, and I was hired as a dishwasher. Later that year, my boss said it was because they had a better haircut and wore nicer clothes. I guess, as my mom would put it, I looked frumpy. Those first 5 seconds made an impression. While Mike was going through culinary college, spending thousands of dollars, I was going through high school, washing thousands of dishes. Nothing important to this story happens the next few years, so I went ahead and moved away and completed college. Now I have a bachelor's degree in modern music ministry, and I moved back home. I go back to working in the kitchen as a prep cook while going on tour with a band off and on. If you listen to the season 3 finale of Truth and Justice, the lead singer, Nathan Friend, donated his time and talent to sing Nobody Knows It But Me.
Somebody help me fight. Somebody help make this right. They say the truth will set me free. Nobody knows it but me.
Now this is where we get to the meat of this story. Guess where Mike got a job as an executive chef? That's right, my restaurant. He didn't appear out of the cornfield, but he did wear hunter orange Crocs and black and white striped pants. So I couldn't initiate a man that didn't take himself too seriously. Just like me. I mean, I did have a perm my senior year in high school, but before you judge, it looked awesome, and I did start a small trend. I'm cooler than you think. Or maybe people think I'm cooler than I think. I don't know. Anyway, Mike is my boss now. And I'm just remembering this. I used to make up songs about my fellow employees while I was working. And I would sing to them. And I'd sing it to them as they'd walk by. I'm sure you realize by now, but this episode and song is about Mike. And we always thought his song was the first put them in a song. But I think it's more accurate to say it was the first good put them in a song. So back to the story. Mike was an awesome boss because he made the schedule. And we loved to fish. So most days we had them off together to go fishing. On our better days of fishing, we'd end up back in the kitchen filleting our catches. I even took a deer in there one year to cut it up. FDA can suck it. And the restaurant did close down soon after I moved away, but while it lasted, there was a lot of days off fishing. Some days where he had to work, I'd go to his lake cabin. Oh wait, I did forget to mention, this restaurant I worked at was right on the lake, and they also had condos and cabins for rent. He was the executive chef, so he was given a cabin on the lake while he worked there. Pretty awesome deal. I just remember the dock I used to fish off of, and used his place to store my canoe. One day I was fishing for carp off of his dock with a frozen hot dog, because when it's frozen, it doesn't come off the hook when you cast it. Little inside secret. I would fish off the bottom, and I've caught everything from large and smallmouth to bluegill to catfish and carp, and in this story I'm about to tell you, a 36-inch northern pike. If you don't know, they have teeth. Very sharp teeth that can sever a monofilament line. They're a long, aggressive, predatory fish. That's why when fishing for them, you attach a steel wire, which is called a steel leader, between the fishing line and the lure or live bait. But I was fishing for carp off the bottom with a hot dog. My pole was sitting on the dock, and I barely caught it as it bounced off my foot. I fought for 10 seconds or so, and the line snapped. I thought the carp or catfish got wrapped around a log and broke the line. I attached another hook and a hot dog. I cast it out again in the same spot. Waited less than 10 seconds and deja vu. 10 second fight, and the line snapped. I was confused and audibly said, "Surely this isn't a pike," but to be safe, I attached a steel leader and another piece of frozen hot dog and put it right back in the belly of the beast. This time it wasn't getting away. I like to use light tackle when I fish because it's a better fight. I use an open-faced bait caster reel. That way I can control the line as it goes out with my thumb. For those of you that have held a fishing pole, you may have noticed an adjustment on the reel called drag. A lighter drag adjustment will allow the fish to take out the line without snapping the line. A hard drag doesn't allow that line to go out, so it could snap, but you can bring the fish in faster if you have a thicker line. I didn't have a thick line, and this is the perfect scenario of why I do this. I was fighting this fish for 20 minutes or so. Then I called Mike. I knew he was at work because he wasn't on the dock fishing with me. I can see the back door of the restaurant kitchen from where I'm standing. He runs out of the kitchen, grabs the trout waders out of his trunk, and runs down to the dock to help me out. In the last 10 minutes of fighting, we bring it in together. I'm doing my best to bring it in without breaking the line as he wades out in the lake and cradles it like a baby. And of course, I fillet it in the kitchen. I took the fillets home and cooked it up for my parents with the spice mix that we used on salmon in the restaurant. It was Mike's mix. I think it's time for me to mention my cousin June. And because Mike and June are married, Mike is now family. My chemistry teacher was a wedding photographer, and they got married on her parents' horse farm, where, yes, they did have a pond, and that's where I caught the biggest largemouth bass of my life. I want to give a shout out to the bait I was using, the Wigglewort, made by Storm. I want to speak highly of the bait, because when I brought it in and was taking the hook out of the mouth, I noticed the bass had a tail of a bluegill sticking out of its throat. She just ate, but this Wigglewort was irresistible. I think we can all relate to that in some way. So to move this story along, because of the first 5 seconds of an impression, I learned a lot in my 7 years in the kitchen. Cooking, hard work, disgusting work, quickness, and the ability to troubleshoot how to be efficient. As I look back, these are some of the good old days, as they should be. Because 7 years of my life in this kitchen and the people in there with me, even though the crap days and nights, I still see it as good. You know, good days, good memories. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but it was 100% part of the good old days for me. I had my first beer in the parking lot. I created and destroyed relationships at the back door of that kitchen. I wrote many songs in between shifts, sitting on the trunk of my 95 Volvo across the street. One was called Let It Rain, which you've heard in the summer vacation episode. But as memorable as these days were, I knew I needed to pursue music. I decided I wanted to do something more, so I made plans to leave. On one of my last days there, I remember playing a song in the parking lot after work for this awesome staff, and it made quite a few people cry. It was about taking memories you made with you when you leave home. And just thinking about it now, I do have a few tears running down my face, because it's amazing how 5 seconds of judgment at the job fair impacted so many years of my life. I packed up everything in the Volvo and left for Memphis. You heard it before, Chrissy was there too. If not, you can listen to the I Don't Care episode. We decided to move back there at the same time. Before I moved, I was hired to play bass for a Memphis-based crunk band. And I also had a free place to live where the deal was, if I put up finishing trim and painted, I could live there for free. And I did both. And eventually, I got kicked out of both. The leader of the band I was playing in couldn't pay me what he promised. So I asked him one day why every show I got paid less and less. His reaction to that confrontation was to throw the cash he had in his pocket at me and told me not to come back. Those 5 seconds made an impression. The owner of the house I was living at appreciated my aesthetic work, and my brother and 3 other guys ended up living there for a few years. We ended up getting a notice from the landlord that he was going to be moving his family into the house. My thought was, well, good, you'll finally get all this stuff fixed then. Because we've been living in this house in an environment really not suited for children. These were some of my favorite good old days. We named the house the Wolf Den. We all had manly nicknames. I was Billy Denim, My room was in a sunken level on the bottom floor, and I had a door that led to what looked like a dungeon. The heat was turned on or off with alligator clips by attaching wires together, so we either had heat on or heat off. There is no thermostat, so there is no in-between. We also had a sewage problem. If someone took a shower and flushed a toilet within 30 minutes of each other, the sewage would overflow into my room. One day I was conducting a regular plunge of the shower and corn floated by my foot. Yeah, corn. You know, a basic redneck guy house. The good old days. I remember the first time my parents came to visit and they cringed. The first 5 seconds, make an impression. So my brother and I moved into an apartment together. I got a job at Best Buy in the musical instruments department. Yeah, some Best Buys had basically a small guitar center in them. To put it in perspective, I had to sell instruments and accessories to people who came in for TVs, computers, refrigerators, and other household electronics. We did have some nice stuff though. For instance, every day I carried around a Taylor guitar. It was $3,000. Small body, great action on it, wide spacing in the strings for finger picking. I should have bought it. I'd even bring in my own guitars to change the strings, change out electronics. You know, it was essential upkeep on inventory, as far as my boss knew. I remember there were times I was called to help a customer with a refrigerator or a TV or anything else in store I had no knowledge about. I'd usually walk up to the customer holding that guitar, and both of us were confused about what was going on. I was a terrible salesman. But to bypass some great stories where I called people out for being liars or getting blood all over me because I saved someone's life, I'll get back to the story. Mike emailed me about writing a song for him. He knew I moved to pursue music and heard some of the songs I posted. He reached out to me about writing a song to say how sorry he was. He explained that he and his wife were going through a rough time. I don't believe he ever sent me why, and I'll respect that. All I needed was, quote, "I need a song to express what I'm feeling." As it turns out, I had just come up with an idea for a song called 5 Seconds. The idea where the first 5 seconds of any experience create a lasting impact. Needless to say, I wrote this song in a Best Buy. At the time, I had a Motorola Razr, and he was texting me. So, I don't have those texts anymore, so I'm not going to mention the exact details, but here's what you need to know. Mike made some mistakes. They broke up for a period of time. She moved out. They had a little girl together. Mike wanted to tell June he was so sorry. He wrote some poetry for his wife, which he sent to me for reference. All this happened in April 2011. This was the first good Put Them in a Song song. I know this because one, my wife, girlfriend at the time, said she had no idea I could write like this. And two, June cried and cried and accepted his apology. They're back together and happier than ever. I don't want to make it sound like the song I wrote did that, because it didn't. He did it. And now, with Ryan Arnold on vocals, this is 5 Seconds.
From the moment I saw you, I've been racking my mind. What can I say? What can I do? You could call it gusts as I walk towards those eyes. It was the longest 5 seconds of my life. Yes, led to a kiss, led to you. And you still leave me speechless. And I knew it was right when I got down on one knee. was the longest 5 seconds of my life. It's moments like these that send me to my knees. I'm humbled by the powers that be. It's a timeless miracle that settles my soul and opens up a better side of me. You really put this man into perspective in the first 5 seconds. Walk down the aisle as time stood still a while. You showed me what perfect was, and now I hold our baby girl. She has your pretty smile. You make me so proud. It's moments like these that send me to my knees. I'm humbled by the powers that be. It's a timeless miracle that settles my soul and opens up a better side of me. You really put this man into perspective in the first 5 seconds. I know what it means to live. I know how it feels to die. When you walked out on me, I learned how to cry. Watching that door shut you out, I've learned one of life's greatest lessons. Will you come back to me? Will you be home tonight? It's been the longest 5 seconds of my life. Moments like these send me to my knees. I'm humbled by the powers that be. It's a timeless miracle that settles my soul and opens up a better side of me. You really put this man into perspective. I learned how to live from the lessons of the first 5 seconds.
Brought to you by Put Them in a Song, in collaboration with MBI Studios. All guests know they are being recorded and are willing to be. All music and songs are created and scored by PutThemInASong.com. You can follow the Root Note Podcast at Root Note Pod on Twitter. If you would like to have a song or music created for you or a loved one, visit PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Root Note. Thank you.